Hello, my name is Christian Jones and this is Island Life. This week we're turning up the volume and taking a ride through history. Beryl Swain was the first woman ever to compete in the Isle of Man TT. Her story, which is often overlooked, is now roaring back into the spotlight thanks to a new punk rock anthem by local band Empire Of. Recorded in three different versions, the track celebrates Beryl and all the female racers who've taken on the mountain course, and it's more than just a tribute. Proceeds are going to support HBOT Isle of Man, the island's hyperbaric chamber charity. The chamber, which has been newly refitted but not yet open, provides life-changing therapy for people across the Isle of Man and urgently needs funding to reopen its doors. Georgia Zapparoli and John Simkis join us to talk about Beryl, bikes, music, and why this cause hits so close to home.
Our charity single is part of a bigger project where we're writing three albums at the same time, all based on women who had a bad lot in life or they've been seen incorrectly by history. The subject for this particular song is Beryl Swain, who was the first female TT competitor. She was banned from racing. They made her race with a diving weight belt on and then banned women altogether the following year. However, this song is a celebration of her, her life, her achievements, and all the other female competitors in the TT. It's a cause very close to our hearts. We are big bike fans. That's part of living here, I think.
And what was it about their story that made you want to write a song?
Beryl herself was a woman who had a passion and lived for that passion and was refused effectively to be able to indulge in that passion. They all told her that it was too dangerous for her to take part. Women couldn't take part. They couldn't see how a woman's death on the international stage would be played out any way other than negatively. And instead of accepting that she was accepting that risk and she was making that decision to live that way, they told her that she wasn't allowed. And we are big fans of personal freedoms all round. And I mean, the TT comes under scrutiny every year, doesn't it, for being dangerous. However, if people want to live that way and they want to be that free, who are we to tell them that we can't?
Now, you've created three versions of the track, which is a bold move. Where did the idea to approach it from different angles come from?
Of the three albums, we have three albums, three versions of all the songs that we're writing. And the first album is a more chilled out, more stripped back version of all the songs. The second album is kind of more trip-hoppy, a little bit more accessible for people. And the last version of the album is a lot heavier, a lot faster, a lot dancier. So the three versions that you've got, with the first one, Origins, is very Fleetwood Mac-y, full-on classic rock tune. The middle version is the most accessible for Beryl's story because it has the expositionary part at the beginning, which has come from Pathé News. And the last track is a banging dance tune. It's really high energy.
And what was the thinking behind each version?
Well, if I can, I would hand over to my musical co-conspirator here. This is the man behind the music.
Okay, well, I would say that we've been involved in the TT in many capacities, including pit crew for the Grand Prix and stuff like that. And I guess the thing is with doing them in different versions is it's a challenge to us to write them mainly the main song being the same thing, but and the root of it being the same thing, but the feel to them very, very different. And and we've just been doing this for, this is our eighth song, is it?
Ninth
song, and we're just continuing in that vein of making the three different versions, because different versions appeal to different people, and of course everyone will remix anyway. But we just thought we'd remix them and send them out as three different versions to see different people, different tastes, different types of music.
And did you write and record them together as a team, or did each version have its kind of own creative journey?
Well, we wrote the core of it. We'll write, that's what you get in Origins, really, is like the core of a song. And then from that, it's kind of extenuated out to different areas. Like, for instance, in the third version, there's a sort of like a fat drum and bass feel to it, even though it's the middle of a kind of a rock tune. It's kind of, it's very different.
I think as well, on the three versions, the first version doesn't have the intro. It's almost a, it's a poem version. It's the name of all the corners on the course. And the first version doesn't have that. The second version, it's very clear. And the last version has that as well. But in the beginning, the first version, you have this it's quite a haunting, echoing vocal. It's vocalizing at the beginning. The second version is far more, the races are about to start, that's what it feels like. And the third version has that high-pitched note, which sounds like the whistle when they call people to the start line at the TT. So they are very much based on the same thing, but accessible by different people.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a favourite version, or are you going to take the diplomatic route?
My favourite version is version 3. But like as Georgia said, the most concise version that you can listen to is probably version 2, where Georgia names all the places on the course on the way through. So it was, I think her way of thinking was like how Beryl would have like memorised, how these riders memorise the course. And she calls out, like in her unique poetic way, these greatly named, amazing, iconic places that mean so much to so many people, right?
It feels almost like a prayer. The way that it's read out, it's quite psalmy. Which, to be fair, if you are focusing yourself to go and do that race, you need to get into that headspace. As far as favourites go, it depends on the mood that I'm in.
But what was your favourite kind of creative process? Because, like you said, you probably you enjoyed making that kind of drum and bass section within in the rock bit, which is probably a little bit different to what people are used to. Was there anything for you?
For me, because all I do is write the lyrics and do the vocals, that's my entire part of it. Colin is the big musical genius behind them. So for me, it was making sure that I had the timing for the corner names in the right place, which was quite difficult because there's no rhyme to them. So you can't make them into a rap. They aren't. It's just a list. But I really, really enjoy the way that the sound effects are in the second one. I love the fact there's the typewriter. And I love the way that Colin works with what I do.
Yeah, for instance, in the second one, there's an effect that I use, which I call Doppler in there, which is like, it's like that all the way through it, which isn't in any of the versions. So when we're playing versions as well, sometimes you sort of like put the bits in your head from the other version. We do that, don't we?
We do.
Quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like tells you which your favourite version is for sure.
So have you woken up with one version stuck in your head?
Oh, continuously. And it's version 3 that sticks in my head all the time. But I think that's, again, it's the last one that came out. So it's
most
easier.
Most current in your head.
I mean, it was originally released on SoundCloud back in February before I managed to get myself together to get it onto Bandcamp. And it's hugely popular in Brazil. And the second and third versions, because they're the most expeditionary, because they've got the names of the corners on them, we thought they would be the most popular. But it's the first version that's the most popular internationally, even though it's very Fleetwood Mac. It's got a very long, slow intro into it. And the most popular comment that we've had back about it is that, yes, it's a long song when you look at the numbers. When you're listening to it, the time flies by.
It's interesting because from like a music production perspective, you can think one version of a song will do the best, and it's always almost never that version.
Exactly.
Never know. It's the beauty of life, isn't it?
It's trying to pick A sides and B sides, isn't it?
You never know, yeah. You never know.
Now you are raising money for HBOT. I think I said that right. Is that,
yes, yeah. I did. The HBOT.
HBOT. Tell me why that cause means so much to you personally.
The Hyperbaric Chamber is a unique facility on the Isle of Man. When a family member of mine had a major stroke, which was 10 years and counting ago, which left them paralysed completely down the right-hand side, attending the HBOT gave them the ability to do buttons and hold conversation and get back on their feet and be a whole human again. And the number of people that I know through my professional work that would benefit from the HBOT, traumatic brain injuries, people with cellulitis, anyone that needs to heal, it's an enormous, enormous help. And I think it's underrated in terms of healthcare on the Isle of Man. We have been without this facility now while they've been having the refit. They've now got a lovely new shiny chamber. It's an amazing thing, but they can't run without help. They can't get up and running and open again. And the number of people that I know from work that would benefit from this facility is enormous. And instead of sending people to the UK for specialist treatment, we would be able to treat them on Ireland, at home, closer to their home, closer to their families. It's a big thing for us. It changed my family member's life for the better enormously. I don't think they would still be here if they hadn't been through that therapy.
It's also helped a lot of TT riders over the years. So I imagine that connection made this project feel even more relevant during the season.
Absolutely. And especially, I mean, in the song, we name a lot of female racers. Debbie Barron is named in the song. And of course, she runs the HBOT. So it would be extremely wrong of us to be raising money, I think, for anybody else than a homegrown charity run by the bikers, helping the bikers.
And talk to me about what it's been like getting the single or singles off the ground, because I know it can be a bit of a daunting experience when you go from, you know, all the way from where you're writing the lyrics to the production, the recording, the mixing, the mastering, the distribution. It's a lot to be getting on with.
It is. And as we say, I mean, this is song 9 from the album. So it's something that we've done before. However, I'm useless with technology. We record the music in our bedrooms. I record my vocals on my phone, but we don't have any of the other technology that people use. I know that people do use the recording studios and they're fantastic. That's just not the way that we do it. And trying to fit writing, recording, uploading, doing all the artwork, everything else around real life is a huge challenge, especially when, I mean, we don't have internet in the house. We don't have any of that. I only have my phone. So it's a big challenge, and distribution as well. I mean, I haven't uploaded it to Spotify or anywhere like that, because as soon as it's on the streaming platforms, you lose control of it. And because we wanted to make money out of it for the HBOT, I didn't want to upload it to the streaming platforms, which pay you so little that it's almost pointless. But we have connections to a music show in Alaska, and their worldwide audience are hugely, hugely supportive of it, and just generally supportive of homegrown indie musicians anyway. So we do have global support, which is wonderful. It's lovely to have feedback in real time from individuals that you don't know personally. They could say anything. So it's very honest. it's been good fun.
What's that like for you from a kind of technical production perspective, working within those limitations? Because you mentioned you record stuff on your phone, well, so you don't have a Neumann to work with.
Well, like, what's funny about that is that she says the phone, and you're looking at it. Like, I'm using an old Fostex M16, which sounds like a gun, 16 track recording studio, and it's about that big. About a foot in size, and like everything I'm recording is done on that, and then just put through the computer and sort it out, and then so I take her lyrics. So I'll write the tune, then she'll write the lyrics, then she'll sing the lyrics with the headphones on, and then send back the lyrics to me, and then we'll do it from there. sort of thing. But one thing about this song, which is great, is that the main chorus, "We'll Ride Through This Storm," is a metaphor for life. It's a mantra everyone should really... it's relevant, you know, every day we have storms that we ride through. The technical side of things is, yeah, another storm we've got to ride through. We're human beings, man, and we have incredible powers, and that's what this song has really been about, is our ability to get up and the determination of these riders. If we applied the same kind of tenacity that these people have for going around that course, then we'd all be all right, I think.
I think recording the way that we do, and all of the songs are recorded in that way on this 35-year-old piece of equipment with a 45-year-old keyboard and analog instruments recorded really roughly through whatever we've got.
54-year-old bloke.
it's very much a completely organic process, and it means that all of our music is very human. We are completely anti-AI, so... not modern in any way, shape or form. I know that an awful lot of people have come back to us and said, oh, well, this could sound sharper. So could you do this on the computer? No, is the answer. That's not how we want to sound. If we wanted it to be clean and AI, then that's how we would do it. We like it that it's human. We like to keep errors, in inverted commas, in, because it's character. It has to be human. More than anything else.
And that's something which often is criticised, because nowadays with audio workstations you can make things almost too perfect. Right.
Exactly. Right. They lose their humanity. Where's the texture? Where's the character? Where's the soul?
Plus there's the fact that we're terrible with the technology. That's the
underlying
that thing.
There's that
too. You don't have to be... I mean, you just make music, eh?
For me in particular, the poetry that I do is very human. It's completely without technology. We can do that without microphones even. That's literally just voice. So my background, folk music, poetry, it's all completely human. I am... extremely anti-AI when it comes to music. I don't enjoy it at all. So maybe it's a bit of a rebellion. It's just us.
And does AI scare you in the sense where it's headed at the moment? Because we do have a numerous number of kind of very high-profile artists which are calling for the UK at least to legislate to actually bring it under control.
I think fear, does it scare me? No. Does it make me angry? Yes.
Why does it make you angry?
It takes the humanity out of what we're doing. I don't know if you know very much about Arabic art, but in that they always put a flaw in it because nothing is perfect except God. So, not that I'm a religious person, but I think that removing flaws from artwork removes the humanity from it. So when you have this movement to push AI and everything, we're automating the wrong things. Why aren't we automating the boring things? Why are we trying to automate creativity? It's entirely the wrong way around. Automate my dishes, fantastic. My laundry, amazing. Love it. Give me more time to be creative, more time to be human. I think the fact that they're training AI on people's art to create other art and therefore turn people into data entry machines, it's entirely the wrong way around. Maybe I'm a dinosaur. Maybe I'll be swept away, probably. But it's the way I feel.
I think it's on a slightly different path. I think that, like, the novelty of it is still wearing, and after a while, the novelty... I'm trying to think now. You know more than I do. There was a renaissance, wasn't there, in, like, old... after industrialization and... like the arts and crafts movement. Mm. So after the Industrial Revolution, there was then a move back to the arts and crafts, which was like taking things back down to human level again after things had been automated so much and made into such a business that basically couldn't fail until people just start getting a little bit tired of seeing the same design and the same shape. So they went to these very individualistic, small cottage industries, and that became really popular. And I see the same for this. I see like these things, they should be working with us, not against us, you know. And what's happening is now the boundaries of being worked against us is kind of being pushed, and that's what you're seeing. But I think common sense will return back to humanity, and the whole process will begin again. There'll be a new technology after this, and the same thing will happen again, and it always bounces back to them. We should do. Well, you know, hopefully.
There is always, the pendulum swings one way and then it swings back. Exactly. So you do end up with brutalism versus Art Nouveau. Yeah. So it's all these square, regular shapes, and then it goes back to the curves. So it's what humans do. There's the there's the culture and then the counterculture, and then the counterculture becomes the culture, and then that's it swings right, back the other way.
Yeah.
Why humans are just the way they are. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that there will be a huge push to make AI completely perfect art, and then someone... I don't know, Bob Dylan, Janis Joplin, Nick Cave, Tom Waits, all the people that I love, they've got gravel in their voices and not a single one of them is note perfect. I love them. Yeah. They are my favourite artists. So to, it depends on what you aspire to, I guess. And it's all a matter of taste at the end
the
of the day.
It's timing as well. And like again, yeah, it's just exactly what you said. Mm. I think, Christian, what you've done is you've unlocked like this massive... Pandora's box of debate that we, you know, we're going to have as humanity. But I think ultimately what will decide it is what people go for and what people don't. And eventually, I think you know, it will. What is that? Popple eat itself.
Yeah,
was a saying as well from a time where, you know, pop was the thing. The latest thing, you know.
But also, I mean, using AI and computers to make art all the time makes art elitist. If you can make art with a pencil and a pen or a burnt stick and a bit of paper, then you can make art from anything. If you're saying that you have to have computers and it has to be perfect, it rules it out for an awful lot of people. So do we want art to be owned by the richest 10% of society, or do we want it to be acceptable and accessible by everybody?
On some of our songs as well, for sure, there's been something we call happy accidents, which is just like a sort of a fluke thing where, you know, we've got three tracks of Georgia singing and we play two together and you get this weird harmony and it's like, oh, wow, we've got to exploit that. So that would never happen in a world where, you know, it had to be note corrected, everything had to be, you know... I'm saying it's like
that the happy accidents are what makes a song a song,
exactly,
aren't they?
Exactly. That's what give it character. It's where the hooks are.
It's what makes life worth living a lot of the time. So I think that will bounce back. Common sense will bounce back after the greed and the, you know, it goes through these terrible stages with stuff like this. And I've lived 54 years on this planet and watched this cycle happen over and over again. So I'm not too worried, to be honest. I'll keep banging my my tabletops and my drawers, the backs of my drawers, to make music, regardless of what is going on.
Mm. Well, I mean, we've said this on previous interviews, but Hot Chip, the song Over and Over, was made on instruments from Fisher-Price. They were children's reception instruments. Amazing tune. And a lot of music is like that. The Beach Boys' Pet Sounds was made on a four-track. Mm-hmm. And, I mean... You don't have to have incredible technology to make fantastic art.
No, it's got to start
it's a total misapprehension and misunderstanding
I think,
of the process.
I think Coldplay, with one of their albums, they recorded every song using just an SM58. They wouldn't use any other, you know, these expensive microphones
fantastic.
You normally see.
Fantastic.
They just use one SM58.
It's a challenge, right, to them to do that. And like,
you it know, makes the music speak for itself, though.
But I mean, like, that in itself is like... A challenge, you're challenging yourself, and that's what makes it worth living.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? When it's no challenge, and you know what it's like, you know what I'm saying?
Anything worth doing,
I mean,
is it difficult?
For instance, this cover here, so we've got the cover of the single.
We brought your CD.
It's actually made by Georgia. She's made a vinyl.
Cut it out of lino. My son did some lino pressing for his GCSE artwork and he made it look easy, so I tried it and it was really, really difficult. And this is the result. So our cover is vinyl printed. The CDs will be as well.
And that is a TT Rider there.
Yes, that is Beryl. I traced a picture of her. It's a really, really famous photograph of her on her bike. Traced it, cut it out of lino and printed it with some ink.
Mm-hmm. And just finally, if people take away one thing from the songs, what do you hope that is?
The spirit of the song. Be resilient. Be tenacious. Keep riding through that storm. keep working on whatever you're hoping to achieve, because your dreams will fall in place.
Yeah.
And also, you never know who you can inspire. That song references all the modern female riders, apart from Carolyn Sells. My apologies, I couldn't fit a name into the lyrics. But everybody else is in there. And it's about trailblazing, and it's about making your own path.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Anything I missed that you wanted to cover?
I just want to say that the single will likely be available at 33 Parliament Street, which is my shop, which is Time Machine. I'm going to work now. You can see by my destroyed bowler hat. But I'm going to go off to the street, as I do every single day. And if you want the physical thing, it's going to be there. If you want to download it.
Yes, the single is available on Bandcamp at Empire Of. It's also available through Time Machine at 33 Parliament Street in Ramsey. There will also be copies at the HBOT and at various places around the TT. We're hoping that other people will stock it for us as well. So I just need to get printing with my lino stamp, and we'll be supplying these CDs all over the place. The CDs themselves are a fiver. If you want to buy all three copies on Bandcamp, it's a fiver. Each song is £2, so you don't have to buy all three if you don't want all three, and the money goes to HBOT.